You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Well, a very good afternoon and welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. Dave Kellner is away once again. This time he's in New York. He's never here, that boy. So Mark Walton in the presenter's chair, joined by Dave Tindall in the studio. How are you, Dave?
I'm very well. Thank you, Mark. Yes, and you?
Yeah, very well. Thank you.
Good.
All good. We'll start with a little bit of a look back at last week, as we always do, and then we'll start with next week, or this week coming up. We've got a couple of events to look forward to. I was going to say on the more traditional front and something a little bit different, but we've also got the World Cup of Golf, which is quite different, an exhibition match between Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, and the Hong Kong Open, which is a little bit more traditional to get stuck into. But in terms of last week, just cherry-picking some of the stuff that happened, we'll start with Danny Willett, back to winning ways at the DP World Tour Championship, his first title for 2.5 years. Wasn't at all entirely straightforward for him, but
no.
it's a good sign from what we've seen.
He'd been dropping hints. He was clearly, he'd had his bad time with injury, loss of form, changed caddies. He was clearly kind of on a downward spiral after he won the Masters, and he'd been building it back up, and he dropped these hints, but I didn't think he was quite ready to string four rounds together in such a big event. But I guess if you've won the Masters, you must, those feelings must come back, that, you know, when your competitive juices really get going again, he sort of, it all comes back to you. So Danny, well, I thought it was a fantastic effort by him to win that. And, you know, this was a guy who got to, I think, world number 9. So he's a proper player. So it's not like the Masters was a one-off fluke. He can win big. And he'd won in Dubai before as well. So it kind of all made sense. It's just that it now makes sense after the event when I haven't backed him.
It always makes more sense, yes, after the event. We need to talk about Francesco Molinari as well, don't we, before we get stuck into this week, because he was crowned the Race to Dubai champion. Looked like Fleetwood might give him something to worry about last week, but it was Molinari who added to his spectacular year, really. He's won the BMW PGA Championship, he won the Open, he played a starring role at the Ryder Cup. He's really gone on to that next level, hasn't he, this year?
Yeah, he's deservedly won it. I mean, he left himself open. If Fleetwood had won, Molinari had to finish in the top five, which he didn't do, but Fleetwood didn't get it done. So, yeah, overall, if you look at the quality of the events he won, Molinari, it was just certainly his year, and it would have been a bit of a shame, I think, if he'd been pipped. So, deservedly so, yeah. Great year for the Italian, who just shows that sometimes you think you've got a player kind of ranked on a certain level, and then suddenly they start putting well and they just can rise, and you have to sort of adjust to what you previously thought.
Yes, yeah.
So, that's a bit of a theme of late. I mean, we'll get on to it, I guess. But Charles Howell on the PGA Tour last week hadn't won for 11 years.
Yeah.
In a kind of golf betting community, was kind of time form squiggle next to his name. never going to win. And there he goes and wins, and a week on after Lee Westwood, who another one who people thought, you know, his winning days were over. So it's fascinating how players, nothing ever stays still. You always have to. It's dangerous to ever rule anything out in golf, and we absolutely saw that in the last few weeks.
Makes it much more interesting, doesn't it?
It does, yes.
Brings the end of that season, really, and it starts again very quickly this week.
3 days or whatever, 4 days later, yeah, here we are again.
A nice big break between seasons. The Hong Kong Open kicks it off. That's where we're going to start on this podcast in terms of this week's events. A 6,700 par 70 at the imaginatively named Hong Kong Golf Club. Who'd have come up with that?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit more about the event before we get stuck into the runners and riders this year.
Yeah, it's also sometimes referred to as Fanling as well, if you want a bit of variety there.
Okay.
It's one of the shortest courses on any tour, basically. 6,700 yards, but that doesn't equate to kind of low scores. It's not like you look and that people are winning with 22 under or anything. I think it's been between about 11 and 15 the last 4 or 5 years. So it is a test. It's kind of tight, tree-lined, dog legs, which means you can't just blast away. You've got to play to corners and stuff. So it does bring a lot of players who previously you think they're not long enough to contest on these long courses nowadays. They love it. Someone like Miguel Angel Jimenez, He's won there four times, doesn't it? Very far. Now he's in his 50s and he was still played well again there last year with a top 10. So these guys who are steady Eddies kind of wait for weeks like this because they think, right, we can compete now.
And a great character as well, isn't he? And we've got a lot of that through the history of winners. There's characters and famous names, really, in recent years. I mean, Rory McIlroy's won this event. Jimenez, as you mentioned, yep. Justin Rose has won it. Yeah, Ian Poulter's won it as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, so. all guys that have played in Ryder Cup. So, yeah, it does typically go to a big name, I have to say. And we've got one of the sort of... Well, there's a bit of a gap, but we've got one of the unusual betting heats here where you've got six players between fives and 16 to one.
Hmm.
It's kind of a bit of a top-heavy market, this one.
It's the class that's risen to the top in the market, though, isn't it? Yes. Tommy Fleetwood, 5-1. Patrick Reed, 6-1. Sergio Garcia, 6-1. Rafa Cabrera Bello is 7-1. 12-1 for Matthew Fitzpatrick. Lucas Bjerregaard is 16-1. 25s, Jason Scrivener, and 40-1 are bigger prices for the others. Any of those top six that I mentioned there, if they won it, you'd say another good winner, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and you wouldn't be at all surprised on any level either because they've all had good seasons. They're all in pretty decent recent nick as well, very good recent nick, some of them. So, yeah, it's a tricky front end, that. So I think I'm going to look a bit further down because I can't really distinguish one from the other.
So taking all of those on,
yes,
with something at bigger prices?
Yes.
Yeah. Go on then, hit us with it.
Somewhat unfortunately, my main tip at 100-1 is now 80s, now I've looked. Always the way, but I can't kind of abandon him now. Probably not the world's most famous golfer, which is a bit of an understatement. Angelo Kay, or Q-U-E, however you want to pronounce that. I'll go with K.
Yeah.
Not Peter Kay. Angelo Kay, Q-U-E. Just look at his form in this event. He was runner-up in 2014, lost in the playoff, top five the year before. 13th in 2015. He's got another couple of top 15s. It's just a course where his game is really, really suited to this. He's a straight hitter, hits plenty of greens, and he's really good at scrambling as well. They're all things you need, the kind of the more kind of, you know, less boom boom type of golf. It's more the sort of artistry that's needed here, and he's someone who's been really, really good on this course. And when he comes back this year, he's going to come back with plenty of confidence, I think, because he's won in on the Japanese tour right at the end of September. Followed that with a top 10 in the Japan Open. Again in Japan in the Dunlop Phoenix. That's probably the best known of the Japan tournaments. He was 17th there last week. So he's got a nice kind of bank of form. He's 39. He's from the Philippines. Often in golf, you get players who are 39 winning because they're sort of thinking about turning 40 or 29 to 30. It seems to be maybe they make some sort of, right, life's kicking on here, I need to buckle down a bit.
So actually, try harder.
Yeah, so you get a lot of players winning in the late 30s. There's plenty of evidence of that anyway. So I think he's 40 in December. So he's
right. This is the last. Yeah, so this is one of the last chances.
Yeah, to get a European tour win. But I thought 100s obviously at very good. 80s, he's still an each way play there. So I just thought I'd be a bit more imaginative than just pluck out one of the top names.
Yeah, still not bad really. Fifth of the odds, 1-6, so 80-1 looks pretty nice in that respect. Any others that caught your eye? Any others on the shortlist for this event?
Yes, I'm just checking his price now, and there he is, 80s as well. Alejandro Canizares, the Spaniard. Now I don't know if you were aware, European Tour Q School was on last week,
right?
Which is always fraught and frantic, and there's all these terrible bad luck stories, or, you know, people holding putts at the end to either get in or people missing them to miss by one. Well, he kind of took all that out of the equation and just won Q School. He shared first place. So I would say, although Q School is a stressful and long week, I'd say because he won it, he wasn't right at that business end where you're biting your fingernails every hole. So you could go either way. He could be just so relieved that, you know, he won't be bothered about this week. Or he could just be absolutely chest out thinking, wow, I've got my tour card for another year sewn up. This is a great chance just to cash in and get a big result, you know, get some money in the bank so I don't have to go through that again next year. So I thought Canizares is an interesting bet this week. This is definitely his type of course because he likes sort of tree-lined tracks where it's short and a bit fiddly. Showed that with a tied 16th in the Andalusia Masters in Valderrama on his last start. That's a very tight tree-lined track. And on this track itself, he's played four times and he's got an 8th and a 22nd. So it's certainly somewhere where he can shoot low. He shot 63 once around Hong Kong Golf Club. So I thought him at 80s, he could completely bomb if he's tired and after Q school, but I just think he might just have a bit of a pep in his step. So I thought 80s was pretty good in this field.
Okay, going with a couple of 80 to 1 pokes then. Angelo K is what we went with, and Alejandro Canizares, the two picks for Dave at big prices. I suppose with this week it's kind of tricky. If I say to you, like, you know, there's five or six of them at the top end of the market, so it might just skew it a little bit and you might just say, oh well, it's just one of those events. But if there was one player to pop up this week that wins at the top end of the market, would you be a bit like, ah, I should have just gone for him?
The prices, I can swerve Fleetwood at fives, Pat Reed and Garcia at sixes, Cabrera Bay at sevens, definitely swerve that. Maybe Fitzpatrick at 12s. Yeah. Still short though. All of them are prices that you almost can let go, even though you'd be a little bit annoyed.
Okay. So that's the Hong Kong Open then for this week. We move on next to something a little bit different. We've got the World Cup of Golf, which takes place in South Oakley in Australia, a 7,170-yard par 72. Just talk me through the format here, Dave, because there's 2 days of four balls.
Yeah, day one and three.
Yeah, and the second and fourth days are foursomes, is that right? Yeah?
And even though it is foursomes, it's still a stroke play format. So you know, they're not playing off against each other. They're just using that format to see what score they get,
right,
whether it be 70, 68, whatever. So obviously foursomes is where you play alternate shot, in which case, if you're a really good player and you're playing with kind of someone who's ranked like 10 million in the world and you play an alternate shot as a fair chance, he might just ruin it for you.
Yeah.
So it's a bit tricky that, how to look at it. I was looking what kind of combined world ranking you need, because I'm not sure you really, I'm not sure, even though I said that, I don't think you need two really stellar players. I think you can get away with someone being ranked 100 odd. So I looked at the last time it was played, 2016, Denmark won and they had a combined world ranking of 112, which is, you know, decent enough. But China had a combined world ranking of 301. They were tied second with France, who had a combined world ranking of 271. So you don't need two absolute top-notch players. You can certainly win with two lesser lights, but I think there's a degree to which they are lesser lights. If you're ranked 800th, you're not winning this.
Yeah.
So it does give a scope, I think, to look beyond the very obvious kind of, the Aussies are favourites, aren't they? At 9-2, Leishman and Cameron Smith. Hatton and Poulter, they'll have a low joint world ranking, but I can swerve them. But, and the United States, Stanley and Kuchar, again, they'll be high at the world rankings, but they're short enough at 7-1.
Okay. 9-1 Australia, England 13-2, US are 7-1. 11-1 then for Denmark. You mentioned they won it last time. Same team as well, Kjeldsen and Olsson.
Yeah, they could go well again.
7-1 for them. 11-1 for them, sorry.
Yeah.
But since we haven't got to your pick yet.
Building the tension. Yeah. Not too far further down, Mark. I'm going to go for 16-1 China.
Okay.
Hao Tong Li and Ashan Wu. They actually, when I said they had a combined world ranking of 301, that was those same two players.
Right.
So, first thing you think of that, they play well together, you know, in alternate shot. They gel well, they play each other's ball well. This year, their combined ranking is 217, so it shows how both have improved. Not just Hao Tong Li, we've seen play well week in, week out on the European Tour, but Ashan Wu actually won the European Tour's KLM Open in September, and he was tied 16th at the Nedbank a couple of weeks ago. So those two have got success in the format. They've also got success in this part of the world, because last time it was held in Melbourne at Kingston Heath. They're referred to as sandbelt courses, the kind of same style, so I think this will suit them. They've already played well on it. I'm just, well, a little bit surprised. They're 16s. I think you could argue that they're a bit better than some of the other pairs. Mm-hmm. They were a little bit shorter than them. And I just thought, in terms of form, they are playing really, really well. As I say, combined world ranking of 217, you think maybe a little bit high, but as I said with those previous examples, it's in that ballpark. You know, anything up to maybe 300,
yeah,
and you're all right. So I thought 16 to 1 those two was a decent each-way bet, because we are what are we each-way terms? We're
a quarter of the odds, 1, 2, 3,
yeah,
and 4.
Yeah, I think they can get in the top 4.
At big prices, bit of double carpet, 33 to 1. What do you make of Germany in this? Seems to do well in every other World Cup. Martin Keimer, obviously a major winner, isn't he?
Yes, two-time major winner.
Yeah, so I don't know much about his partner, to be fair, Kiefer, but...
Yeah, I think I did rule them out because of Kiefer's world ranking.
Right.
Because I thought, as much as Keimer's played well of late, I know you're saying that they do well in every World Cup. Is that... I hadn't really noticed that top four, top five kind of thing.
I'm talking mainly football World Cups, as I was like saying Germans love a World Cup rather than
like
a golf World Cup. Yeah.
Well, Germany are rubbish at football now, aren't they?
They are, aren't they? They got
relegated.
Yeah.
Is that about?
From the Nations League.
Yeah.
It was more of a little bit tongue in cheek.
Yeah, well, their world ranking combined. Well, Kiefer on his own is 291st.
Right.
And Keimer, surprisingly, is 159th.
Has he dropped that far?
Yeah. So. I thought that was too high.
Yeah.
So even though, yes, they're bred to play well as a team, as all German sports teams are, we're ruling that one out.
Okay. So the pick there, China for you. Did you have any others, or was it just the one pick for that?
We have, I believe, top 5 and top 10 betting on this, which is quite good if you want to play some of the lower ranked teams.
Let me have a look. Top 5,
so if you look at
top
10... there's 28 teams, so top 10, you're kind of top third, aren't you, with that? I thought Sweden...
2-1
2-1 were worth a look. Alexander Bjork and Joachim Lagergren, they are respectively ranked 63rd and 188th, which gets you to 251. So again, that's fine. Bjork played some really good golf of late, played well in Dubai as well. Lagergren is a bit hit and miss, but he did close well last week. He played a couple of good rounds on the weekend in Dubai, shot 65-17, and that's really impressive. He can throw daft numbers in. I mean, he shot a 79 the day before,
right.
But he is a player. When we talk about sandbelt courses, you often see players who play well on those play well at Lynx Golf. He's always done pretty well in the Alfred Dunhill Lynx, so it's just a slightly tenuous, but if I'm building a case. But I think they're good enough to make the top 10 there. One other tiny little point. This course, Metropolitan Golf Club, it did once hold a big event. It once held the 2001 WGC Accenture Match Play when all the big guns were there. And actually a Swede got to the final. Pierre Fulke, imagine that. So just another little snippet that I thought, oh right, okay, well, that slightly adds to my Swedish case.
Yeah.
So I just thought they're two players high enough in the world rankings combined to give this a good crack. And I don't think making the top 10 is too much of an ask. And 2-1, I would have that nearer 11-8, maybe.
All right. 2-1 Sweden to reach the top 10, or finishing the top 10 then in the World Cup of Golf, and China the pick to win it for Dave. Should we move on to the big event
of
the week? It would have been a big event maybe 5-10 years ago, but let's talk about it as it is now. Tiger Woods takes on Phil Mickelson. They're calling it the showdown at Shadow Creek.
$9 million. Is it because they're shadows of their former selves and their bones creak? I don't know why it's...
Yeah, maybe doesn't quite have the appeal that it once might have had. It's the world number 13 against the world number 27 now, whereas 5 years ago it had been world number 1 against world number 2, maybe 10 years ago. So, what do you make of it, Al? I sense a bit of cynicism.
I think you've picked up on that well. When it was announced, I thought, what, really? Because I get the idea of two kind of heavyweight names coming together. But say you're thinking about boxing, normally it's intriguing if you've never seen them fight. I've seen them play against each other before when they were better.
Yeah.
So why do I want to see that now? And why on earth would I be paying $19.95
yeah.
for it? Because it's pay-per-view in the States. As far as we sit here speaking now, I don't see that it's on in the UK anywhere.
Right, okay.
But what I mean, what are we actually watching here?
Just that it's straight head to head? They're going to be mic'd up, I believe, so you'll be able to hear them. Is there that kind of sense to it, where it's more of an event that way rather than just those two going round together in a tournament that's they're obviously playing for they're not playing against each other there, are they? In a respect, they're playing to win the tournament. Does that help?
Yeah, like, I mean,
obviously
with boxing, you're playing. In a big fight, that is the format you get in boxing. So they're playing a different format to what you normally get in golf.
Mm.
They're not as good as they used to be.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean anything at the end of it. I don't know. What's it mean? To question life itself.
Yeah.
Thinking about this tournament.
4-9 Tiger Woods, by the way. 7-4 Phil Mickelson.
Yeah, well, as daft as it sounds, it's almost worth having a bet on Mickelson, because you can't back Woods at those sort of odds.
Well, you can't back Woods at 4-9.
No,
but can you back Mickelson at 7-4 given what he's been playing like?
It was dreadful at the Ryder Cup, dreadful, obviously. But Tiger lost all four matches, so he was no good as well.
Yeah.
Tiger obviously had a really good finish to the year, won the tour championship. So fair play to him. But I don't know. He's had some time off since then. This was Mickelson's idea. My thought is that Mickelson wants it more. I think he's more. He plays a lot of in practice for majors and big events. He plays a lot with the younger guys, where they all have big side bets going, giving it the old trash talk. So maybe he's just a bit more used to that. It'd be a bit freer, you know. He's not like the Ryder Cup was played on a very kind of tight course that wasn't for him. And it exposed him, his lack of form. But somewhere like this in Vegas, where he's, you know, it's a bit of maybe a second home for him. He knows the area. The course is designed by Tom Fazio, and he plays well on his design. He does like, I mean, he picked the course, I guess.
Mm.
There's just about enough there where you could think, I could back Mickelson here. But I'd like to see it, though, if I was having a bet on it. But as far as I know, I can't see it. But I'm not paying $19.95 for it.
Is it true that Mickelson flew out before the Ryder Cup to practice here?
I've read that, yeah.
Well, in which case, no wonder he played so badly at the Ryder Cup. His mind's clearly on this instead.
Well, I think as much as you say that half in jest, I almost think it is. I think he's been thinking about this for ages.
Yeah. Fair enough.
It's almost like Tiger. You have to sort of remind him that you do know it's that thing with Phil. Oh, right, yeah.
That $9 million thing.
Yeah, where Mickelson's been sort of talking about to his kids and family for like months.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take Tiger down. And I don't know. It's just a bit odd.
Yeah. Part of me thinks it could be absolutely superb, and part of me thinks it could be a disaster. It's like when boxers come out of retirement for one big payday and there's all the hype and they're only coming back for the money and they get found out because of that. But I think it smacks of that a little bit.
But
you've also got two of the greatest players that have ever been.
How would it be? What would it need to be super?
If there's just a little bit of needle and they're having to go at each other all the way around and side bets are getting bigger and bigger and there's, you know, real pressure turns out of it.
Would you believe it? I don't know. Would you believe it?
I don't know. It'd be quite
It's a shame there isn't a price on the tie after 18 holes.
Yeah.
Because it could be that contrived that you'd think, they've set it up so they can go to the playoff. But there is no price on that. Don't know what we'll be trading it in, running or anything.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It'd be a unique event.
Yeah, and I'm a bit sort of, I don't see the point, but there it is. If it was one of those, it was Mickelson was sort of 11-8 and Tiger was a bit odds on, but 7-4, I could almost chuck a begrudging fiver at it. But I think you can build enough of a case for Mickelson because it's his baby, it's his toy on a course he likes. To say that 7-4 might look all right.
Yeah, it was Mickelson's idea, wasn't it? During a round against Tiger somewhere.
They played in the Players' Championship at Sawgrass, and Mickelson shot a terrible score. But he obviously thought, "Oh, I wonder." never misses an opportunity for. I mean, I was looking how old he is. So he's 48 now. So he's 18 months away from playing in the Champions Tour, and he'll be absolutely cleaning up in that.
Yeah.
So it's almost like he needs something to sort of keep him going. I don't know. Yeah, it's there for you anyway. If you wanted to bet on it, it is there. We have the price. And 7-4 Mickelson, I think, is about enough if you can build a case for Lefty. And you think Tiger, is his heart really in it? I think for Tiger, he'll be genuinely thinking about next year properly. Like, how can I win a major?
Yeah.
This is just a bit of fluff, I think, for him.
Yeah, I suppose the difference is Tiger could feasibly go win a major next year, and on current form, Mickelson won't.
No, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe this is Mickelson's big day in the sun, final big day.
What was it, 9 million?
Yeah.
Winner takes all.
Yeah. What's 9 million to them, though? Is it like me and you going around playing for a tenner?
Well, that's the other thing, isn't it? As you said, maybe these side bets will ramp up a bit.
Interesting to see how it pans out, anyway. Yeah.
Well, will we see if we can see it?
We might not see. Yes. In terms of main bets this week, then, Dave, because obviously that's not one of your strongest opinions of this podcast.
No.
Just summarise your best bets for us.
Yeah, so in the Hong Kong Open, I'm going to have a point each way on Alejandro Canizares at 80-1, and also a point each way on Angelo Kay at 80-1 as well. And in the World Cup of Golf, I shall have a point and a half each way on China at 16-1. And I'll also have a couple of points, so the China bet bombs, a couple of points on Sweden at 2-1 to finish in the top 10.
Superb. Pleasure as always, Dave. Thank you very much. Good luck.
Cheers, Matt.
And enjoy. I was going to say enjoy it this week.
Some of it.
Enjoy some of it this week. And even if you could pay for it, I don't think you would for that last one. But thank you very much, Dave.
Thank you.
That's the thoughts of Dave Tindallon on this week's golf. An interesting week of golf. The new season starts again in the Hong Kong Open. We've got the World Cup of Golf, which is something different, a little bit different, and something entirely different in an exhibition match between Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson. If you are having a bet, very best of luck and enjoy this week's golf.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.